Isn't it time to clear out the clutter? As you reclaim some space in your dressers, cabinets, and closets, make a little room in your heart, too. Here's how. What you have gently used or no longer need, you can give to St. Vincent de Paul. What you haven't used lately, our great local St. Vinny's thrift stores would be happy to convert into resources the Society of St. Vincent de Paul will use to help our neighbors in need. Donate your gently used clothing, shoes, accessories, furniture, books, small appliances, and more at a local St. Vincent de Paul store. The sale of these items at St. Vinny's stores in Stoughton, Verona, and Monroe helps fund assistance the Society provides to help local families and individuals most in need to make ends meet. In the area, St. Vincent de Paul stores also give away hundreds of thousands of dollars in clothing, furniture, and bedding each year from the store inventory directly to households struggling in poverty. So whether you shop at St. Vinny's, donate to St. Vinny's, or do both, you're helping our neighbors in need.
Welcome to another podcast at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, the Axley Law Firm, St. Vincent de Paul, S&R Remodeling, and AMS. Joining us now from The Nation and the Capital Times, John Nichols. John, I don't even know where to start anymore. I really don't. You know, when I see headlines like Trump considering bringing Corey Lewandowski back to his organization to clean the mess up, I'm thinking to myself, okay, this isn't going to get any better.
No. It's like, it would be like saying that you wanted to, I'm trying to think of how, there's got to be a rock and roll analogy for this one, right? You know, it's like, it probably in some way involves Ringo.
Well,
but bottom line is this: the problem with Trump is, number one, he doesn't know anything about governing. Zero. It's incomprehensible to him. It doesn't make any sense. Two, and this is a more significant thing: he doesn't actually know anybody that he didn't pay. Or, you know, like, sort of pal around with in the billionaire class. And so here's a guy who doesn't know anything about governing, and he doesn't know how to find anybody who knows anything about governing. And so it's really, I mean, he's sort of stuck at this point.
Well, the other thing I noticed in a very, very long piece in the Washington Post about the chaos within the staff, there are a lot of politicians that get themselves in legal trouble, but they end up having a unified front with a group of loyal workers that are all on the same page.
This or guy may even agree with you on issues.
Yeah. Right. This guy is running a house divided. And the kind of money shot quote out of that article was, working for Donald Trump is like torture.
Oh, ay, ay, ay. That is painful. You know, and I want to step back and make an apology here.
To Donald Trump?
No, because I casually used Ringo's name. And in fairness, he is on such a higher, better level.
I was going to say, I kind of like Ringo. He eats blueberries, like, and he's going to live to 100. Oh,
I like his
song. Yeah, no. And he's friends with Joe Walsh. And anybody who's a friend of Joe Walsh is a friend of mine.
There you go. Okay. And so on so many levels, I want to just, you know, like, make that deep, deep distinction.
All right, let's get started with the Robert Mueller situation.
Tonight, a bombshell announcement. The Department of Justice appointing a special counsel to take over the investigation into Russia's interference with the 2016 election, including possible collusion with the Trump campaign. The man now leading the investigation, former FBI Director Robert Mueller. He'll have all the authorities of a U.S. attorney, including the ability to take the matter before a grand jury and the ability to issue subpoenas. The announcement of a special counsel comes after Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself.
Therefore, I have recused myself in the matters that deal with the Trump campaign.
President Trump has called the investigation into possible collusion with members of his campaign a charade. Former FBI Director James Comey was in charge of an investigation until he was fired last week. Tonight's dramatic announcement coming after that other bombshell 24 hours ago. The memo coming to light about President Trump's meeting in the Oval Office in February, raising concerns Mr. Trump allegedly wanted the FBI to go easy on former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. It was the president who warned the FBI director after firing him that, quote, James Comey better hope there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. The White House has refused to say whether those tapes exist. But what we do know, according to sources, is that memos do exist. James Comey had a documented history of keeping notes, especially when it came to controversial matters. Tonight, after it was revealed, he wrote a memo saying that President Trump pressured him to drop the Flynn investigation. Now we learn there could be more memos, more documentation of his interaction with the president. Just as he documented his meeting in the Oval Office in February, one day after General Flynn resigned. President Trump allegedly asking Vice President Pence and Attorney General Jeff Sessions to exit the room after a briefing, leaving the president alone with the FBI director. According to the now infamous memo described to ABC News by a source close to Comey who has read it, Trump allegedly then said, "I hope you can see your way to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He's a good guy." The White House tonight denying President Trump pressured Comey to stop the investigation.
The president's been very clear that the account that was published is not an accurate description of how the event occurred.
But sources close to Comey expect that Comey will testify before Congress and the American people.
Daytime TV, again, the networks are starting to break into their soap operas and game shows and run this stuff. And but is that a flashback to 1973?
It's a ratings goldmine.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. There's a Donald Trump's grave is being dug right now, his political grave. And it seems there's a competition between the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Donald Trump to see who can make the trench deepest.
Yeah, and Trump's winning by a mile, right? Because every time he does an interview, it's way more revealing than anything that an unnamed source provides, right? Because let me tell you, let's give you an example here. They send out H.R. McMaster, who, by the way, is pretty much completely ruined by his service in the Trump administration. But they send him out to.
It's kind of like when Robert Reed gave up his Shakespearean acting career to go on the Brady Bunch.
It's a similar concept, mm-hmm. Yes. And so he goes out and he makes excuses about stuff, right? On the Russians, when Trump's meeting with the Russians, said, "Oh, that never happened. It wasn't like that. I was there." Blah blah blah. And then, Trump goes and says, basically, reveals on so many levels that it was, that he's not even uncomfortable with what he's doing. And so then McMaster's got to, I'm sorry. I mean, it must have meant something different there. and then another example, though, another classic example is where you've got all of his staff out defending on the Comey stuff, right? Including Spicer. And they're all like hanging it on Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general. Another person, by the way, who's been ruined by association with this administration. Then Trump himself, in the interview with NBC, what does he say? "Oh, yeah, I was going to fire him anyway a long time ago." Basically, Trump came close to saying he didn't read the memo. He just had somebody prepare it so the staff could claim it was the reason.
And then used Russia as the excuse.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. It keeps circling around. And so, you feel sorry for these people, like McMaster, I don't feel that sorry for Spicer. But some of these folks, they go out and they actually try to do their best to cover for the president or to make it function. And then he says and does, it's not always things he says, sometimes things he does. But anyway, says and does stuff that totally wrecks him. Right, that completely discredits his own people. And at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, how could any journalist work in their sources do better than having the president himself on a regular basis reveal that his administration is dealing in disinformation?
Well, I want to also say that my entire life, Republican media, Republicans in general, have been the party that claimed to be the law and order party, the party of the FBI, the party of the CIA, the party of a certain authority, right? The daddy party. We now have Rush Limbaugh saying this afternoon that, in fact, that if Robert Mueller comes up with evidence that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, he's not going to believe it. We have Sean Hannity saying that the deep state and the CIA are planting stuff on Trump and remarkably trying to use the death of a DNC staffer to try to misdirect people. John, they are completely throwing away the things that they used as their virtue for years. What's going on?
Well, it's fine. I don't know.
Over Trump? Really?
Yeah, no, I don't.
You're going to throw away your supposed principles over Donald Trump?
Yeah, I don't want to up the game on you any here, but you know, in addition to their loyalty or seeming commitment to the rule of law and FBI and CIA and various other agencies, they were they used to be kind of against Russia.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of like, there's a lot that these folks have abandoned. It's sort of amazing where they've ended up. And how about
not defending John McCain and prisoners of war?
Oh well, that yeah. I mean, it was the
well, I mean, that's really that's when we really started going down this hole.
Yeah, and I mean, well, I think it's a lot. The hole is a really deep one. These people call themselves constitutional conservatives, right?
Oh, they're going to have a convention.
Their regard for the Constitution is no comic. And did you see, somebody pointed out, and I know we may even get to this later, but I just thought this is an incredible factoid. Dan Bice from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who really does great work, and, he bothered to read the Sheriff Clark autobiography, Cop Under Fire. Like, he read all the way through it, right? And in it, Sheriff Clark was going on and on about the Constitution. And as Bice pointed out, Clark misstated the Constitution, which was, of course, enacted in 1787, or at least the convention was 1787. Some of the final votes on different parts took a little bit longer. But Clark dated it to 1776.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it's just sort of like these constitutional conservatives don't know the most basic stuff. I mean, they're clearly not aware of it. And I think that's the most fascinating thing. And it maybe gets to the heart of the matter and all the stuff you're talking about. There's awfully good evidence, that, kind of most of what they were talking about, most of the things that they kind of made the big deal, the touchstones of their politics, they A, didn't care about, and B, didn't even pay enough attention to learn the basics. It was literally just talk.
Weird.
And now it's somewhat coming out. And they're still lying about it. And there's a portion of their base that's gotten, and I don't want to suggest that there's an intellectual thing here. I think it's something deeper than that. They have gotten so used to being lied to, right? They're so, kind of comfortable with, or at least experienced with being lied to, that even when the lies degenerate to complete absurdity, there's a chunk of these people that still accept it.
That is remarkable.
Yeah.
Here is Donald Trump at a press conference standing next to the esteemed president of Colombia.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the light of a very busy news week, a lot of people would like to get to the bottom of a couple of things, give you a chance to go on record here. Did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn? And also, as you look back...
No. Next question.
As you look back over the past 6 months or year, Have you had any recollection where you've wondered if anything you have done has been something that might be worthy of criminal charges in these investigations or impeachment, as some on the left are implying?
I think it's totally ridiculous. Everybody thinks so. And again, we have to get back to working our country properly so that we can take care of the problems that we have. We have plenty of problems. We've done a fantastic job. We have a tremendous group of people, millions and millions of people out there that are looking at what you had just said and said, what are they doing? Director Comey was very unpopular with most people.
That really isn't true. Second of all, what does he mean by we need to get back to working the country?
I know. Yeah, because he fell into grifter language there, Spot. You know, it's like, yeah, hey, we're working the
country. We're working the country.
Yeah, we're working.
Sounds like something Paulie Walnuts would say on The Sopranos.
No, it's like grifters. No. Yeah, we got to get back to working the country. We haven't, there's still some federal agencies that haven't been shaken down sufficiently. But no, this is the interesting thing about that, because every single thing that he said there was wrong, which was sort of fascinating because it's hard to get everything wrong. But think about this. He's asked, the word impeachment is thrown into the mix. And you realize, Spy, just in and of itself, that's pretty amazing, because that doesn't happen very often, where a president at a press conference has the word impeachment thrown in. I mean, I don't think it happened during the Bush presidency, just by the fact that there was some discussion of impeachment. And I think, obviously, Clinton faced some, but he was actually in the midst of it. And I suppose Nixon faced some. But, you know, that word doesn't get thrown in usually in your first, 115 days. And then his response, which was incredible, he says, well, everybody thinks that's ridiculous. No, there was a poll that just came out a few days ago that showed 48% of people favor impeachment, only 41% oppose. So, in fact, people don't think it's ridiculous. They actually, a plurality of Americans, supports it. And then he's like, well, everybody hated Comey, right? You know, well, no, the FBI people who've come forward and talked to Congress say, in fact, that Comey was extremely popular inside, sort of beloved figure. And polling data shows that I hope I'm right on this figure. I think it was only like 29% of people thought firing Comey was a good idea.
All right, stand by. John Nichols,
we're going to
take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times at slysoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. So it is unusual that a president has to deal with words like an impeachment in the first 118 days of his presidency. I also found this quite amazing. This is a statement at the beginning of that same press conference.
And we have the G7. We have a lot of great things going on. So I hate to see anything that divides. I'm fine with whatever people want to do, but we have to get back to running this country really, really well. We've made tremendous progress in the last 100 and some odd days, tremendous progress. And you see job numbers, you see all of the production that's starting, plants starting to open again, haven't been open in years. I'm very proud of it. That's what I want to be focused on, because believe me, there's no collusion. Russia is fine, but whether it's Russia or anybody else, my total priority, believe me, is the United States of America. So,
Russia is fine. Believe me, my priority is the United States of America. You know, a president really shouldn't have to utter, my priority is the United States of America. And when they do,
yeah.
And when you do, there's a problem.
Well, you kind of swear an oath on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, and I mean, it's also just this, everything's going great. got to get back. You know, it's like, and I honestly do believe that Trump believes this, and it's delusional, but he.
Well,
I think he
when
he does think that when he's in charge, everything's sort of perfect.
Well, when Catherine the Great saw the Potemkin villages, she thought everything was okay, right?
I guess there's some of that going on, but you know, it's
sorry
like,
for
you
the,
like,
the sorry guy, for the arcane the reference.
Was, that is arcane, but appropriate. But you realize that the guy was speaking after his own actions caused some problems with the stock market in the last few days.
Mm-hmm. 370 points on the Dow.
Yeah. And so the notion that you'd stand up there and say, everything is just going great. Now, if he had said, in some ways, he suffers from... so little self-awareness. He's so unaware of the circumstance at times that he doesn't do what could work for him. Now, here's what he could say. You know, look, everything that's been said about me and the Russians is wrong, and Comey needed to go because he wasn't doing a good job, and I stand by that strongly. They've appointed this special counsel, and, you know, nothing's going to come of that. But I do want to point out that this whole chaos about all this is about issues that weren't central to my election. My election was about creating jobs, focusing on this, and that's what I really want to do. And so I accept the special counsel because I hope it will dial this down so we can get, you know, back. You know what I mean? If he had actually acknowledged some of what's going on, he can make his own defenses within it, but then argue that it does distract from the focus he wants. Well, I still might disagree with him, but at least he'd be credible. But he doesn't do that, Sly. He literally is in a circumstance, overwhelmingly of his own making, where there's tremendous problems. There are, you know, economic, political, and social repercussions of some consequence. And yet he tells you everything's going great.
Look, we haven't even gotten to the Michael Flynn stuff yet, where we now know that he hired Flynn knowing he was under investigation. We also...
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me just finish. We also now know that there were far more interactions between the Trump campaign and Russia before and after the election. I mean, this thing is... Every day, something else gets dropped on us.
Every day is a winding road, Slot. I just want to... I'm so glad you brought up the Flynn thing. Because I'm sort of delighted. I mean, I'd say kind of delighted today because of all this Flynn stuff that's come out. Because, and I don't know if everybody's going to like dot the I and cross the T here as they should, but I think it should be emphasized that it has now been pretty well established, I think, would you agree with me, that Mike Pence is a liar?
Well, I knew that when I used to listen to him on talk radio.
No, but I mean, Mike Pence was in charge of the transition, Sly.
Yes.
and it's sort of like there's all this stuff coming out about, I alerted him immediately that he was taking money from these people. And I, you know, well, it wasn't, it's not just stuff coming out about Flynn per se, but on the Russians, it's also stuff with the Turks. It's all this other stuff. There's all this information coming out. And, you know, one of two things, when I say Mike Pence is a liar, one of two things is clear. Either he was a front man for a transition in which he had absolutely no role, and he should publicly acknowledge that, you know, he's just a front man that they put up, and what he does is completely irrelevant. Or he had to have known about this. But either way, I mean, these revelations about Flynn reveal things about Pence that if anyone cared at all, if anyone in the world cared at all that he was vice president of the United States, would be something of a scandal.
Well, here's what I find that is interesting, and it would be interesting to know if you could simultaneously impeach a president and vice president at the same time.
You can, by the way.
It is also should go noted that for people who say that Trump can't fire Mueller, that's not true. He can fire the assistant attorney general who hired Mueller vis-a-vis firing him that way, although that would be quite an action, wouldn't it, John?
Well, I do. In Rosenstein's defense, here's the deal about Rosenstein. And I think it's an important thing.
Is that not true? Trump could fire Rosenstein? And...
Without a doubt, yeah. Because when you appoint a special counsel, that person essentially exists as an extension of you. You are saying that for whatever reason, I cannot pursue this inquiry, so I empower this person to do it. If you remove the person who's been empowered, who does the empowering, then that's, you can put somebody else in there in that same position, and they could fire, right? Because it's the position that's empowered, this other person. I hope that's not too complicated, but it's a basic organizational construct. But here's the interesting thing as regards Rosenstein. There's some people now are saying, oh yeah, he's actually this you know, pretty okay guy because he appointed somebody who, you know, it's pretty hard for Trump to fire. And I agree with that. Rosenstein is smart. There's no question. Putting Mueller in there was it's a kind of a very sly move because here is a guy who has so much stature, so much respect in the Senate. I mean, just overwhelming that it's very, very hard for Trump to, I mean, even if Trump fired Rosenstein, it'd be very, very hard to get away with trying to fire Mueller. So on balance, smart move there, but I will point out that, you know, you don't get hero points for appointing a special counsel when you participated in the process and helped to legitimize the process by which you fired the guy that precipitated the whole crisis where a special counsel came in.
So
yeah, I'm not.
No, you're right. He doesn't get a pass for that. Author of a number of books about the FBI was on MSNBC last night. His name is Tim Weiner. Here's what he said about the investigation.
Okay. So I think what happens now is that the FBI sticks with its counterintelligence investigation, and Mueller looks at crime, and he looks at money, mm-hmm. and he looks at obstruction of justice. The FBI is set up as an intelligence agency mm-hmm. that goes against spies and is a criminal law enforcement agency. I think you got to divide the work here. The FBI stays on the counterintel part. Bobby Mueller rides to the rescue to save the Republic from criminal abuses of power and obstruction of justice.
Yeah, we really shouldn't forget about all the other things that Donald Trump is doing right now.
Well, and this is why I'm not the biggest fan of the special counsel thing. Okay? I think there's no question Mueller is more than up to this task. And he will probably do it very, very well. And there will be very few leaks because, by all accounts, he despises leaks. Mm-hmm. It'll be very professional from top to bottom. And it will probably come up with some remarkable information. The problem is it will probably take a very long time. And during that long period of time, you will have people in the pundit class as well as political elites, perhaps even in both parties, certainly in the Republican Party, who will say, well, you know, we got to hold off while the special counsel is looking at this thing. But the fact of the matter is, Sly, the special counsel is looking at a very, very narrow zone, perhaps highly significant. It may be massively consequential, but a narrow zone of the complaints about Donald Trump's presidency.
Well, and that is under some debate whether Mueller can go back to Rosenstein and have the scope of this investigation widened.
Even if he can, Sly. Let's say that he can really, let's say he can do the Ken Starr, right? You know, mm-hmm. go just move from topic to topic. He is looking, let's keep on the core thing. He's looking at, as it was suggested, their criminal wrongdoing, okay? Or at least there's some evidence of that, that's the zone he's in. Much of what Trump has done might not rise to the standard of a criminal conviction, but it still should be held to account. He had, Sly, the right as President of the United States to fire the FBI director. But if it was obstruction of justice, if he fired the FBI director to prevent an inquiry, that may be criminal. But as you and I both well know, obstruction of justice is very hard to prove. It's a really complex thing to prove. It is completely within the legitimate purview of Congress to look at that, to look at what Trump has said, to look at the removal of Comey, to look at the circumstances, and say, we don't need a criminal charge here to say that what the president did was wrong, and that that is arguably an offense that at the very least merits censure and could well open a legitimate discussion about impeachment. And I don't want the special counsel to become the excuse for avoiding examination of violations of the Emoluments Clause, of a host of lawless and irresponsible actions by the president.
Well, you're right, because the president could set that expectation and make it work to his advantage the way Scott Walker did.
Yeah.
That's kind of how Scott Walker... That's kind of how Scott Walker worked the investigation. Hey, look, they didn't charge me with anything. When, in fact, he'd done a multitude of things that were completely unethical. Let me just play one more clip here of Donald Trump. Yesterday, he spoke to the cadets, the Coast Guard cadets. These are a very elite group of people graduating from one of our academies. And here's what Donald Trump decided to say.
Look at the way I've been treated lately, especially by the media. No politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly.
You know, here's a guy who goes to the CIA in front of a very sacred spot where the names of people that were killed in the line of duty, and talks about his crowd size at the inaugural. He goes to the Coast Guard graduates and starts talking about himself in a pitiful, pathetic, self-absorbed way. He simply has no concept of decorum and the position that he holds.
Do you think it's that, or do you think it's no concept of history itself? That he really doesn't know how absurd what he's saying is. That's where I wrestle with it, because there's clearly a lot of stuff.
Are we saying something different here?
No. I think they're the same thing, but it's just, you're talking about decorum, and decorum would be like, you don't say these things in general. Even if it was true, you probably wouldn't say it because it's the wrong place to do it. I'm saying at a deeper level, when he does say it, he's not conscious of how wrong he is, of how false this statement is. Because I'm going to suggest to you, I think Lincoln was treated worse.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.